It's a beautiful day and a fine time for healing. Podcast host Randy Fine, a narcissistic abuse expert and the author of the groundbreaking book Close Encounters of the Worst Kind and the captivating memoir Cliff Edge Road, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being are all that matter. So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. And now, here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am Randy Fine, your show host. A revolutionary process based on the four chambers of the heart and rooted in Toltec wisdom that brings emotional clarity, healing, and freedom. The Warrior Heart Practice is a powerful new method to reconnect with our sense of authenticity and inner knowing and realign with our true nature. Today's special guest, Heather Ash Amara, has trained extensively in the Toltec tradition under the tutelage of Don Miguel Ruiz, author of The Four Agreements. Heather Ash was inspired to write after experiencing her own struggle with self-worth, fear of rejection, shame, and blame. Her goal is to help others achieve freedom from the inside out, genuinely believing that we are all fascinating, imaginative, capable beings. Using her invaluable wisdom of the Toltec teachings, the Warrior Heart Practice guides readers through the process of enthusiastically working through life's inevitable obstacles and themselves mentally, emotionally, and physically. Heather Ash Amara is the author of a number of books, including the Warrior Goddess Training Series. She brings an open-hearted, inclusive worldview to her writings and teachings, which are a rich blend of Toltec wisdom, European shamanism, Buddhism, and Native American ceremony. Visit her website to learn more at heatherashamara.com. Let me introduce her to you, and we'll get started. Good morning, Heather Ash. Welcome to A Fine Time for Healing.
Thanks, Randy. Glad to be here with you.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you. So, how did the Warrior Heart teachings come to be?
It came in an interesting way. I was talking with a friend of mine, and he was sharing a story of something that he was struggling with in a relationship with a lot of angst and a lot of upset. And I looked at him and I said, honey, that's not exactly what happened. Like, here's what really happened. I was there. And so I would share a reflection back to him of what was true. And he would kind of shake his head and go, oh my gosh, you're so right. I was telling myself this whole story. And then he'd go off on his day. And about 3 days later, he'd come back to me with the exact same story of upset and angst. And the third round of this, I've just really realized as humans how often we get stuck in our stories, in what we tell ourselves, and how difficult it is to get clear with what's true. And I really said a prayer and just said, is there any way I can help my friend? And this process dropped into my being. That was about 6 years ago. So I've been sharing it and teaching it, using it myself. And we found it's an incredible, really simple, but very deep process for helping tangle the places where our emotions get tangled up with our story and where our story gets tangled up so that we can't see what's true.
I think we could all relate to that. All the clients that I work with have that issue. We get stuck in our story sometimes, especially us. So you had a dream in the early 1990s that you would soon meet a person who would change the course of your life, and then a few weeks later you did. Who was that person that you met?
That person was Don Miguel Ruiz, who is the author of The Four Agreements. And yeah, it was one of those dreams where I woke up thinking, right, where am I going to meet this man? And a week later, someone came into my office and said, oh my gosh, you have to meet this person. And my whole body said, oh no, I'm not ready. because I knew my life was going to drastically change, which it did. And I'm really incredibly blessed to have worked with Miguel and continue to work with him as much as I have. And so a lot of the teachings are really from that Toltec wisdom lineage.
Where were you and where was he that you were brought together?
I lived at the time at up at Davis, California. I went to UC Davis up there. I was working on campus. And Miguel was coming to Sacramento, which is about a half hour away, once a month. And at that time, Miguel had apprentices in Santa Fe, in Los Angeles, and in Sacramento. And so I was incredibly blessed. I met him, and then the next month, he decided to take on a group of apprentices in Sacramento. And so I was able to step into that group and work with him very extensively for the next 6 years.
That is so amazing. Wow. I'm sure it did change your life in a huge way. That his book has changed many lives, and it's
yes. The
simplicity of it is amazing. But you know, your process is quite simple as well, just a little bit different. So, from the Toltec perspective, every human contains a unique ray of light that is his or her individual manifestation of spirit and form, and this is what you call in your book. Big soul. What is big soul?
The big soul is a part of you that is connected to all of life, that is eternal, that is pure love, is how I think about it. And each of us has had experiences of connecting to our big soul in that place when you're not thinking, where you just feel immersed in something and part of something so deeply. That's your big soul. And as we do things like meditate or do more of the things that we love, we reconnect with that wise, steady, grounded part of ourselves. But think of it sometimes as like your grandmother or your grandfather, like wise elder self.
Okay. Some call it the higher self?
Yeah, some people call it the higher self, exactly. Essence, there's a lot of words. Yeah.
Okay.
Universal consciousness. Mm-hmm.
So you had, like many people, you had core beliefs of wanting people to like you, seeking attention and approval externally, all those kind of things that make us insecure and sort of fearful in life. Where did that come from, and what made you want to change that?
Well, there's two ways we can talk about this. There, in the Toltec world, and the Toltecs were a group of people that came together in South and Central Mexico to study perception. And one of the core beliefs is that we're all dreaming and that there's something called the dream of the planet. And that is the way that most humans are dreaming right now. And a lot of us get our stories from the dream of the planet. And the way that you can see what's happening in the dream of the planet now is if you look at the 5 o'clock news or you pick up a newspaper. Or if you look at advertising. So the main message that we're getting from most media, like, again, 5 o'clock news, is usually around scarcity and fear. Here's all the bad things that are happening in the world. And with advertising, the main message we get is basically, you're not enough. How advertising hooks our attention is by saying, you'll be happier or more beautiful or more likable if you buy this product. And basically what it's saying is you're not enough. And so a part of all of us, we get these stories from...
You broke up and we lost that. Say that again, please, because we didn't hear you at all.
There's what we call the dream of the planet, which is the way
okay.
that humans are dreaming.
Okay.
And so as we start to look at our own lives, we can see that we have... this place where we've taken on beliefs from our culture, from our peers, all those agreements. And there's also things because of our experience that we make up, stories that we make up. So a part of my experience was that I moved around a lot as a kid. And so I was insecure in a lot of ways because we'd move someplace. I wouldn't know anybody. I'd feel really gawky. And then the second year I would settle. I would make friends. And then we would move again. And so the whole cycle would start over. And so there's, because of that experience, I created a story, which was, I have to make sure people like me, everybody's going to leave anyway, or I'm going to leave. So there was this tension in me of this old story, along with the larger dream of the planet story. And all of us struggle with these stories where we think, we get messages, I'm not smart enough, or I'm not good enough, or in order to be okay, I have to make sure people like me. And those are some of the stories that we look at in the Warrior Heart practice, is how to untangle them. Because you can have a really little experience as a kid, and then you start weaving a whole story based on your experiences.
Very true. Very true. Wow. So we talked about the big soul, and then there is the little soul. What is the little soul?
The little soul is a part of us that feels separate, that is what we also call ego or your personality. And this part of us is important because it gives us a sense of identity. But for a lot of us, because of the dream of the planet, because of the stories we tell ourselves, it's the little soul that's making up stories. The little soul ends up being often in fear. And how I think about it is that when we're born, when we're really little, like usually between younger than 2 years old, the big soul and the little soul are connected. They're talking to each other. So anytime the little soul feels frightened or confused around something, it turns its attention to the big soul, and the big soul in a way reassures it, and then it goes out back into the world. And when around 2 years old, we start to make up stories. And the little soul starts disconnecting, and it starts looking out to the world to feel safe, to understand what's going on. I like to think about it as that the little soul gets lost. So if you can imagine being a little kid in a marketplace and you can't find your parents, and that sense of terror and, oh my God, what am I going to do? A lot of us are working, we're living from that place of fear of, I have to figure that, I have to be a particular way. I have to keep myself safe. And what we want to learn to do is hold and understand, to help the little soul reconnect with our big soul, to hold both of them. And I've seen a lot of places where sometimes people are like, oh, the little soul's bad. I need to get rid of the little soul and just be my big soul. But the truth is, we're in physical bodies for a reason, because we're learning how to embrace both the little soul and the big soul together and work with both of them.
That's powerful. The little soul. You also say, I just wanted to go back to something that you said in the beginning. You said, as a human, you are the perfect blend of ethereal and physical, half spirit and half animal. And, you know, I had another guest that received a download from information on a near-death experience kind of situation, who was also told that there is an animal part of us. And some people argue with that. They say no animal in us. But so what do you mean when you say that? I understand it, but maybe you can explain it.
Absolutely. This is one of the beautiful teachings I learned from Miguel, is that we have three aspects of ourself: our animal self, our human self, and our divine self. And when we break it down, really, the animal self and the human self are part of the little soul, and the divine self is part of the big soul. It's really important for us to understand that we're animals, because we are. We've been domesticated, but at our core, we are still animals, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a thing. And so our animal body needs certain things. Our animal body needs a sense of safety. It needs food. It needs sleep. It needs shelter. It needs love. And they've done tons of studies now with little kids, that if little kids aren't loved, if babies aren't loved, they will die. So that's a basic animal need, as well as just the basics. So we want to really be in good relationship with our animal and love our animal self and listen to what does it need. Then there's also a human part of ourselves, and that's how we interact with other humans, communication, thinking. And what I found is that when we separate them out, we can attend to each of them. Same thing with the divine. That divine part of ourselves is our connection to God, divine, to universal consciousness, to the higher self, whatever that you want to call it. It's that part of us that has deep wisdom that we can access at any time. And what I've really found from my work of studying with Miguel and a lot of other teachers and then living my life and having a lot of experiences is that where we get confused often is things get tangled together. So when we start to separate the pieces out, like when we start to really look at ourselves as, okay, what does my animal need? It becomes simpler to name.
Wait, you broke up again. Say that again. We lost you for a minute. Can you just say that again?
Yeah, absolutely. So that when we separate these parts out and we start to attend to our animal self without judgment, without good, bad, right, wrong, just like what does my animal need? It's easier to listen. Same thing with the human. What does my human self need? And what does my divine self need? How do I connect more? You know, and just a simple example, this morning I checked in with my animal and I was like, I need to do less caffeine. Like my body was like, too much caffeine, girlfriend, stop. And my human self was agitated. I've got a lot of things going on. So there's a lot of thoughts. And I checked in with my divine self. My divine self was like, sit, meditate, clear. And then I can be more effective as a human. So.
Okay. Wow. Okay, that's interesting. I guess the animal self would be, you know, the needs of our physical body, the things that we crave, the things that I don't know. I'm trying to figure this out. Can you give us an example of what we would experience as the animal self?
Yeah, and I can, you know, part of why this gets confusing is that as humans, we've made this story that our animal nature is bad. It's going to get us in trouble. There's a big story around that, right? If I just let my animal, I'm going to go out and have sex with everybody, and I'm going to overeat, and I'm going to do all this stuff, which isn't true. The animal self, what the problem is when the human, when the mind gets connected to the animal self, and the mind says, this is good, this is bad, this is right, or this is wrong. When we can separate those out and just attend to this physical body as an animal, then we let go of it should look like this or this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and we can actually listen to our bodies. You know, and just a simple example, there's so many diet books out there, right, of like what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat, and there's so many thoughts about what's right for the body. And if you're thinking, I mean, like for me, I was vegetarian for many years, and my mom kept saying, Heather Ash, you should be eating meat. And I'm like, no, that's not right. When I finally stopped thinking and just went to what my body needed, I realized I was sick all the time. This was just for my body at that time. I was sick all the time. I was exhausted and that my body needed meat. If I just tried to continue to think from my human self, I may never have gotten there because I had agreements and stories about what my body should need. What we're doing when we're tending to the animal is we're asking, actually, what does this body need? Not do what I think it should need or what I read it should need, but actually, what does this physical form need?
Hmm. Okay. That clears it up.
Good.
Your big soul eternally whispers to your little soul, you are enough exactly the way you are. You are all of creation. You are loved. You are perfect the way you are. Your big soul is always holding out a hand and saying, let's explore and create in this wonderful world of taste, touch, sight, sound, and feeling. So our big soul is encouraging, supportive, all those things?
Yes, absolutely. And it's always present. You know, so often we can get into feeling sense of I'm alone. I need to get information or insight or guidance from the outside. But the truth is, if we turn towards our own big soul, you're going to find everything that you need because that wisdom is inside. It doesn't mean that we then aren't inspired by other people and want to be part of community. But there's a really different place when you reconnect with that big soul. There's this relaxation that happens in the body. There's this openness. There's this joy. And what I've seen is that when we're connected to our big soul, we're more creative, we're more joyful, we're more playful, and we have access to information and guidance that changes how we relate to the rest of the world in a really beautiful way.
This is a really great perspective. I love it. It's simplistic, yet it's profound, and that's what I like. I like when we don't have to go too deep to figure this out. You know, this is very simple if we break it down. About the path of the warrior heart. What is the warrior heart? And that's also the name of your book, The Warrior Heart Practice.
Yeah, that we, each of us has these qualities of warrior and heart. So the warrior energy is about focus, clarity, commitment. It's that 100% yes. And we can have an excess of warrior, which is when we start to force or push or get dogmatic. Or we can have a deficiency of warrior, which is where we procrastinate or we really don't take responsibility for our life. So we want to find that balance of solid warrior energy along with heart, which is really important as well. So connecting to our heart is connecting to our compassion, receptivity, opening to possibility. And really, the Warrior Heart Practice is designed to help people get out of their head, out of their stories, out of trying to figure things out of hurts from the past, to drop down into the wisdom of their heart and to learn how to guide themselves from that inner heart, big soul place.
Do we want to integrate the parts of ourselves together, or do we want to recognize that they're all separate? What is our goal?
The goal is to separate the pieces so you can clean up the pieces individually and bring them back together. So for an example, if you have an engine and the engine's not working well and it's all gunked up, you don't go bad engine, throw the engine away. You go, okay, let's take the engine apart. Let's clean the pieces and let's put it back together so it works efficiently. So it works like it's supposed to. And what happens is that we get gunked up. Our thoughts get connected to our emotional body. We don't know what's true. We get confused. We have a lot of experiences from the past that we haven't cleared. And so everything in a way can get gunked up. And so separating out, which is what the Warrior Heart does, it teaches you how to separate out the emotions from the story from the truth, and the truth from your intent. And it's not that any one of them is better than the other. They're all part of the whole. Like with your heart, you wouldn't say, well, I like my left ventricle the best. That's the best part of my heart. You know all of your heart. So what we're doing in a practice with the Warrior Heart Practice is understanding we want to come back into wholeness. And in order to come back into wholeness, sometimes we have to separate the pieces, clean the pieces up individually, understand the separation, and then bring them back together so you understand the wholeness. Because both are true. They're distinct, but they're also connected.
Hi. You know,
hello.
Blog Talk has disconnected me twice during this show, and I've had to call back
that's
in. So
weird.
if there was silence, it's
that's
because
why.
I got disconnected. Okay. Anyway, I'm back. Okay.
Great.
I wanted to talk about, let's see where I am. Got all my little post-its here. okay. Yeah. I've gone through the book and I've got all my little post-its so I know where I want to go. All right. So we just talked about the warrior heart. Okay. I know where I want to go. All right. You say the number one question you're asked is, how do I clean out all the agreements, stories, and experiences that don't serve me? And the answer is the fundamental practice that is laid out in this book. And you talk about the four chambers: feeling, story, truth, intent. So let's go into each of the four chambers, and you'll explain to us how we go about recognizing them and cleaning them up.
Absolutely. So those four chambers, again, are feeling, story, truth, intent. And whenever you're confused or upset around something or triggered, that you have a reaction to something, what I invite people to do is to start in the feeling chamber and do that separately than the story chamber. So in the feeling chamber, the question is, what am I feeling? And this is tricky for us because as humans, we've tended to connect the feeling with the story. We have a feeling, we tell ourselves a story about it. The story then causes us to have more of the feeling, and we go back and forth between the feeling and the story. So what the practice is to learn how to just sit with your body and ask yourself, what am I feeling? What's going on in my body right now? And you might sense there's anger. I have anger right now. Take a breath and see anger. You're not trying to fix it or change it or understand it. You're just feeling it. You know, same thing with any emotion, disappointment, fear. You're just tracking, where is it in my body? What's happening? And to sit with it without trying to understand, fix, change, just be with it. Why this is so important is that many of us spend an incredible amount of energy exiting our emotional body, trying not to feel, or else cycling our feelings because we have a story and then we feel it and then we tell ourselves a story. And so we're caught in the story, in the feelings. And so this teaches us to just feel without judgment, without understanding, without trying to fix it, just experience. And then once you've turned towards the feeling and sat with it, then you go to the story chamber, to the next chamber. And the question in the story chamber is, what am I thinking? What's the story that I'm telling myself? So again, this is now separate from the feeling. So then you're getting curious about, what am I thinking? What am I telling myself? And curiosity is really the key. So, and I invite people to go into the story chamber as if you were an archaeologist. So an archaeologist wouldn't like go out and pick up a pottery shard from the ground and go, I found something, we're done here. Like they would know, okay, now we start digging. Now's where the information comes. And it's the same thing with our stories. Often the story that's triggered you or that is happening in the moment is just the top layer of a much deeper story. That's a much older story. And so we want to get curious, what's gotten tangled up here? And so often our stories get really tangled. And I can share examples. I mean, I'll give, you know, the overview, and then I can make it more real or practical by sharing an example of it. But what happens with our stories is that they're like, if you had a bunch of necklaces that you put in your purse and carry around for a while, they all get tangled together. And in order to separate the necklaces out or the chains or the cords, you don't just start pulling and yanking at them. You have to really methodically undo and make space. And it's the same thing with our stories. So once you've started to unpack what the story that you're telling yourself is, then you step into the truth chamber, the third chamber. And what most people do is we step into the truth chamber, we write a better story, and we tell ourselves that it's the truth. And so we have to really learn what's the difference between truth and story. And there's a couple ways that you can know. One, the truth is incredibly simple. The truth doesn't have defense or doesn't try to justify. It's one sentence with a period at the end. And then the other way is that your body knows what's true. Your being resonates with the truth. And so when you tell yourself a truth, you'll have a sense of yes in your body. And we're experiencing that differently, but we can learn how to really ascertain the difference between a story and how it feels in our being and a truth and how that feels. And then the last chamber is the intent chamber. What do I want? One word. So you pick one word that's the quality that you're willing to commit yourself to. Now, the intent chamber is not, I want them to treat me better or I want the situation to be different. Your intent is, what are you willing to commit to for yourself in this situation? What do you need? And so that can be love. It can be joy. It can be presence. It can be neutral. I mean, you can have any word for your intent. And then this is where the real magic of the practice happens, because now you go back through the chambers. So you have your intent. Imagine you hold your intent in one hand, and then you go back to the truth chamber and see, is there any other truth? And now you step back into the story chamber. And you have two new guides. You have two new allies, your truth and the intent. And so now you can look at how else can you perceive the story? How can you release? A lot of times what happens is you realize the story, but sometimes you realize, oh, I just need to tweak this so that it is empowering or nourishing to me rather than disempowering or emotionally draining. And then you always end in the feeling chamber. Question, what am I feeling? Because you want to come back to the body, to what you're sensing in your body. That's a brief overview of the practice.
Okay. So basically what you were saying is that we reframe the story in a more empowering or positive light. So reframe,
yes,
is kind of
one step. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay.
That's where we start, really, is the reframing. What happens over time is you realize how much of your story isn't true and that you actually don't know what's going on with the situation. Because so often what we're doing is making up a story of why somebody else is acting the way they're acting. And you realize, I don't know. And
exactly.
So what starts to happen is the story drops away, because you really get to the truth is, I have no idea why they're doing what they're doing. Or you see different truths about yourself. Oh, this is actually not about my relationship with this person. It's actually about my relationship with my dad. That's what the story is about. So it helps us to reframe or just completely release.
Right. I mean, with narcissistic abuse, the stories that are in our heads are immense. So many of them.
Yes.
And it's really confusing.
Right.
It's very confusing. It's very hard to separate them out.
Yeah.
But first you have to figure, I mean, I would think that you would have to have self-esteem or self-confidence or self-love at some in order to be able to step back and say, that's him, not me. Because I know that the people that work with me have a hard time grasping that, because they think that their self-worth is so low that they think that it's always about them. It's always their fault. So where does that come in? Where do we separate that out?
Yeah, it's a great question. What happens is we have a story that I'm always wrong, they're always right. And so in places where people have very low self-esteem, or their story is really tight, or they're in situations where they have a really difficult time seeing the truth, using the Warrior Heart practice with a therapist or even with a friend that can help you separate things out can be life transforming. Because then you, instead of avoiding the feeling, you go into, what do I feel? Like, I've just had this situation, without telling the story of I'm wrong, they're right, whatever the story is, to just sit with, how do I feel? I feel hopeless. I feel bad about myself. And to not tell the story, but just to be with the feelings, does is it allows us to then step into the story chamber from a really, really different point of view. Because we're not running from the feelings anymore. We're letting ourselves have the feelings. And then there's some piece of magic that happens that we're then able to witness the story. And again, you may need help for somebody that's really deep in a story. They may not be able to step out of it. But I've had situations where people have been really deep in their story, and just by sitting with the feeling and then going into the story chamber, they look at it and go, wait a minute, I can't always be wrong. Like, that is a story. That's what I've been telling myself. Or, you know, I can share an experience I had one day many years ago, but I had an experience where I was in a relationship and it was really challenging. And one day I just let myself feel what I was feeling. And then I asked, and then I really listened to what was I telling myself. And I had this story in my head, you deserve to be punished. And I was like, what is that? Like, where did that come from? And I realized it was a really old story. And I didn't need to know exactly where I got it. I just needed to go, okay, I don't want to hold that any longer. That's not serving me. And that totally changed the relationship going forward. But I realized my behavior was stemming from that old belief. I need to be punished. When I then got it, I was able to immediately step into the truth and go, that's not true. Like, I'm doing my best. I'm a human that's doing her best, period. So that really transformed my life.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because that's something that, everyone who's gone through this particular kind of trauma, abuse, feels. They all have.
Yes.
And I like, the way you put it. So to go back into our story and question it and see where it came from, you know, and get rid of it mm-hmm. if it's not relevant
yes.
to today and to our, best self. You say in your book, when you are in the truth and intent chambers, you are in the present moment. And when you are in the present moment, everything is fine. Life can be taken one step at a time. You are not freaking out about the past or disaster minding the future. So right here and right now, we're okay. We've all heard that we should live in the present moment. And that's not easy to do, especially when we're muddled with the stories and all this stuff from the past. So what is it like to focus on the here and now, the moment, and why should we do that?
Because all your resources are here in the present moment. Is how I think about it. Your creativity, your connection to your own wisdom, your capacity. When we're connected to the past, like when our attention is on the past constantly, of what happened, or even on the future, what should happen, we can't drop into what's happening now and what's my next step. And when we're living in past or future, it's often really confusing because we can't sort what's mine, what's somebody else's, what's from the past. But in the present moment, one of the things that I teach people I found incredibly helpful is to put one hand on your heart and one hand on your belly and just take a breath and say, I am breathing. Because that's one truth you can always count on. Even if you can't figure out anything else to be true, that one truth is like, yes, I'm breathing, I'm here, I'm in the present moment. And from the present moment, then you can look and get clear about what's my intent. What do I want? And I think that's where so often we get knocked off course in our own lives is because we're not asking ourselves, what do I want? Or the question of what do I want is focused on how do I change them? How do I make them different? Or is from a story of I'm broken, I need to fix myself. When you really start to get clear about what you want, then you can say, oh, I realize I want a sense of peace in my life. That's my intent. That's where I want to put my focus. And then you take your actions based on that intent. How do I create more peace in my life? Not how do I make my partner more peaceful or how do I make the world more peaceful? You can't control. When you're doing this work, you realize over time, one huge truth is you can't control anybody else. But you can choose where you put your attention. And that changes everything, because now if you step back into your world of I want to create peace here, then you can start having creative ways to do that. That's not based on making somebody else different, but it's based on what's true for you.
Thank you. That really makes a lot of sense. That really does help. So you say that there's no time frame, no right way to work with your story. And, as we're talking about it, we're sort of moving through all these things and we're not getting deep into each thing because we don't have time to do that. But it's not about just saying, okay, this is my story. Okay, I'm going to get rid of that. this is a process, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I tell people that it's not called the warrior heart finish. It's called the warrior heart practice.
Okay.
And so often we want a tool that's like, we'll just fix the problem. It's not realistic. We have to understand that we're unpacking a lot of things. We're unpacking our own domestication, what we learned from our parents, what we learned from our peers, the stories that we've made. And, you know, I remind people, it's a lot of times the stories that we're carrying are not even ours. So we're having to separate a lot of the pieces out. And it takes time. It takes time. And so to focus on the practice, just like you would, you know, you wouldn't say, I ran today. I never have to run again. I've done my exercise for my lifetime. I brushed my teeth, so I never have to brush my teeth again. Like, you know, there's maintenance. In order to keep your body healthy or your home clean, you repetitively do the same things over and over again as part of a cleaning process. And so instead of holding the story, when I clean, then I'll be happy, or if I fix myself, then I'll be a good person, to realize that part of your work with yourself is to clean the old stories, to clean the old emotional patterns, to let go of what's not yours. And that it takes doing it over and over again, and to fall in love with the process, to really enjoy the process, because it's a joy to start to take responsibility, not punishment, responsibility, which is very different, of cleaning up what's yours and what's not yours, what's not yours to take care of. And I think probably a lot of the people that you're working with, I know a lot of the people I work with, a lot of the stories we're letting go is that we can somehow fix the other person, or that we have to do their work. And what the invitation is clean your part. You can't clean up other people. That's not your job. Your job is to joyfully present, you know, be present with what's yours to clean.
Yes, I think that's the first thought that those who have been narcissistically abused have is, you know, what can I do for the other person to make my life easier? How can I change?
Yeah.
How can that person change? Or I'm waiting for them to change, instead of looking at it, accepting it for what it is, and then saying, I have to change. So
yeah.
I really love what you're talking about. You say there's four ways to come back to your intent when your story grabs your attention. First one is say out loud, hi story, good job, you got me again. Now I'm going to shift my attention. So elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah. I found bringing humor and a sense of self-love is really important, that so often we have really advanced judges, so that the way we talk to ourselves is negative, is punishing, is you should do it right. And changing the way we talk to ourselves is really vital, because that's part of the story. The story is based often in negativity, and what we're shifting the story so that we become our best friends and our allies. And so we have to change the way we talk to ourselves. And so to just find the humor of, like, of course your story is going to hook you again. That's okay. You just unhook it and try again, as long as it takes. That's one of my mantras. Just as long as it takes, try again, unhook, start over.
Right. Yeah, I always tell people to have a conversation with themselves when they're feeling self-doubt or, you know, self-loathing or whatever. To argue with yourself, stand there with the other, you know, a second self, and say, why are you saying that to yourself? Are you, you know, let that go.
Yes.
Let that stuff go. But, yeah,
yes.
You do. You have to have these conversations out loud. It really helps. So the second one is ask yourself, what would so-and-so do here? And insert your intent, or what would XXX do here? And insert your intent into the sentence. Elaborate on that one.
Yeah, that's really helpful too. So if your intent is love, for example, what would love do here? What would compassion do here? What would presence do here? And that's so helpful. You know, I'm having a challenged right now with someone in my life. And I was really upset. And, you know, I've been working through the chambers. And it was so beautiful the other day. I just stopped and I was like, okay, what would unconditional love do here? And I realized it didn't matter what their behavior was. I wanted to practice unconditional love, which includes making really good, clean boundaries from a place of love for myself.
Good.
And it just shifted everything. And I was like, right, I have to make boundaries. The situation I'm dealing with, the boundaries need to be made. But I don't have to close my heart to make the boundaries. That's a story.
Mm. Wow, that's profound.
I've had a lot of practice. Yeah, I've had a lot of practice with this one because this has been one of my main focuses. But it's beautiful because now I think of this person that I'm in struggle with and my heart opens and I'm like, okay, we'll figure it out. Doesn't mean I'm going to end up being friends with them or, you know, being in a relationship with them even, but I know I want to do it from a place of love and that's my work and I'll probably mess up and that's okay. I'll try again.
Okay. Third one is go deeper. Challenge yourself to look at your story again and see what earlier childhood story might be at play. We kind of talked about this, or even older ancestral story. We do carry in our genetic component stories from the past and from our other generations. So I think we kind of went into that. The fourth one is step back into the feeling chamber and take a few minutes to simply be with your emotions with no story. We kind of talked about that too, but let's elaborate on that one a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes it's important for us just to keep going back to what am I feeling and just having the feeling, again, without trying to explain, understand, fix. And what that does, I found, is it creates more of a sense of self-intimacy, that we're being with who we are now rather than who we think we're supposed to be. And there's this compassion that arises. Now, I always think about the feeling chamber as you want to go in as if you were with somebody that you love dearly who is really ill or who is dying. And the way you would be with that person is you would sit, you would be quiet, you would be loving, you would hold their hand, you would show up and be present with them. It's the same thing with your emotional body. For most of us, we've avoided our emotional body or we've rebelled it. And so to be able to just sit and go, hi, emotional body, how are you doing? I'm here. I'm just listening. I'm present. Really make huge difference in being able to stay clear with our intent.
I can see that. That's great. That's a great way to go back and look at our story. The art of stalking yourself. This is chapter 8. it sounds strange, but, you know, so what are you talking about in this chapter, in the art of stalking yourself?
Yeah, the word stalking, in the way that we're using it, think about a big cat and how a cat stalks its prey over days. You know, it follows its prey. It looks at where it feeds, where it sleeps, what its patterns are. And so what we want to do is learn how to stalk ourselves and stalk what our patterns are, what emotions arise, what thought patterns arise. And again, this is a way to become more intimate with ourselves. So instead of saying, I shouldn't be thinking that, I shouldn't have reacted this way, I shouldn't be feeling this, we just start to look at, well, what am I feeling? And when do those feelings arise? What is a story that I'm telling myself? And that will help us over time unravel it, because then you have all the data you need to be able to make a new choice.
And in this chapter, you talk about the three attentions. So what is the first attention?
The first attention is how we create our reality the first time. So it's basically how we're domesticated. It's what you've learned the world is. And so, you know, an example of this is if your parents told you, you need to go to college, you need to become a doctor, and you need to have kids. Like, that was the expectation of you're going to get married and you're going to become a doctor. Then that's what you would do, because that was your belief system, okay? And there wouldn't be any questioning of it. It's just, this is the way the world is. This is what I'm supposed to do. The truth about the first attention is there's some level of ease with it, because you know what you're supposed to do. But it also is a jail, because you can't find out, who am I? What do I want? And that's where the second attention comes in. And the second attention, you start to question and say, well, wait a minute, maybe I don't want to be a doctor. I'm just using a super simplistic example. You know, maybe I want to become a dancer. Maybe I want to go to Europe for 3 years before I decide what I want to do. So you start then creating your own reality and your own identity. So it's also about your identity and who you perceive yourself to be. So you then start to who you want to be and create new guidelines for yourself. The danger of the second attention is that sometimes people can get really dogmatic. So people can fall into what I call spiritual smugness. And this could be with anything, where they're like, well, this is the way the world's supposed to be now. Like, now I have a better dream of how the world should be, and everybody else should be in this dream as well. You know, a quick example, one of my students called me and was really frustrated. She's like, I made this agreement this year that I was going to be completely truthful and honest with everyone and honest to myself. And she said, now I'm super frustrated because nobody's being truthful with me. And I was like, honey, you made that agreement for yourself. You can't make that agreement for other people. So second attention is, this is what I want to put my attention to. But if you then start going, and everybody should do this, now you're going to get in trouble because nobody else
right.
will need to, whatever it is you're making real, right?
I can see that. Yeah, I can see that happening. And the third one?
The third attention is then, you're incredibly flexible. Third attention, you're basically connected to big soul. You're in the moment constantly. So you don't need guidelines or rules. You show up. You have what I think of as a moral guidelines for yourself, and you're really present with what's happening. So there isn't the world should be like this or I should be like this. It's I'm here, period. There's no story. There's just presence. And that's where you're really connected to your big soul.
I love the warrior heart practice. I really like the way you have broken all this down in a way that's very relatable to us. It helps us really see these things in ourselves. You know, I do the same kind of work. I verbalize it differently, but I like the way you put it, you know, because I just like the whole process. It's excellent. So we're talking about your book, The Warrior Heart Practice. And it's a simple process to transform confusion into clarity and pain into peace. Oh, yes, we all want to do that. Heather Ash, where is your book available?
It is available online and then at your favorite bookstore. So it just came out about a month ago. So it's still a brand new book.
Okay. Excellent. Well, it is an excellent book, and you know, as you say, it's a simple process, but such a profound result. I like that. You know, people who have been in pain for so long and have spent their lives doing work, trying to work on themselves and fix these things, they're tired of work. They don't want to do work anymore. So this is a softer approach. It's a way to just say, okay, self, you know, let's have a conversation. What's going on? And it's just a gentler way of doing this, and I like it. So thank you for this incredible wisdom. I know it was years of studying and practicing and putting things together to come to it, but I think it's excellent. So I really appreciate you being my guest today. And your website is Heather Ash Amara, which is, her name is Heather Ash, like Heather and Ash together as one name, and then Amara, A-M-A-R-A. Thank you, Heather Ash, for being my guest today. It's really been eye-opening. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Randy.
Have a great, great day.
Good work
Thanks.
That you do. I know that's a hard world to be in, and it's awesome. Thanks, hon.
Yes. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. So we
you
are
too.
Out of
Bye-bye.
Time today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's show. Visit randyfine.com, RANDIFINE.com, and be sure to sign up to receive updates on the latest blog posts, events, and upcoming shows. Thank you for listening.